Rudy Valley invites you to listen during the next hour to the Fleischman Yeast Program. Tonight's star, Miss Miriam Hopkins. This is Rudy Valley and Company. Graham, if you will kindly imagine you're a talking program with the names and numbers of all the players. We present tonight Miriam Hopkins in a scene from the lake with Horace Grail. Robert Wilder, professor of sound phenomena in the Radio Institute of Ticklenology, comedy hit in the Broadway melody of 1936. Eddie Stanley, youthful West Coast comic, and Doris Wester, who graduated directly from Major Bowes' Amateur Hour to the Rainbow Room at Radio City.
In addition to these artists, I have persuaded a friend of mine, now in the audience here, to permit an interview during the hour. He is Brother Albert, president of St. Mary's College in California, the youngest college president in the United States. I hope that Brother Albert and all of you will enjoy listening to Doris Wester, Eddie Stanley, Robert Weilhack, Horace Braham, and Miriam Hopkins. Thanks to you for everything that love could bring you brought me. Each tender love word you happen to say is hidden away in memory's bouquet. Thanks a million, for I remember too that tenderness that your caresses taught me. You made a million dreams come true, and so I'm saying thanks a million to you. For I remember too that tenderness that your caresses taught me. You made a million dreams come true, and so I'm saying thanks a million to you. Professor Robert Weilhack here some months ago, and those of you who saw him in Broadway Melody of 1936 will be glad to know that he lectures not only on snores, but also on every type of sound phenomena. There is no sound so minute, no noise so obscure, that it has escaped the professor's attention. Tonight, for example, he tells you what he knows about sneezes. Class attention, please. Professor Weilhack is here.
Thank you, Mr. Valley. Ladies and gentlemen, students, dear scattered brains of the great radio classroom, sound phenomena may be divided into human and inhuman, and some that are both, I think. Human sound phenomena divide into articulate and inarticulate, the articulates being all cluttered up with words and phrases and sentences and things. But the inarticulates are not. They are the yawns, the sighs, the snores, the sneezes, and laughs, and cries, and grunts, and groans, and coughs, and screams, and burps and raspberries. For the initial lecture of the series for this semester, we will take up the fourth on that list, the sneezes, leaving the yawns to follow later, as they surely will. I have prepared myself, as usual, for my little talk on sneezes by getting my feet wet, and so with the doors and the windows arranged to form a draft, I may be able to illustrate my lecture with appropriate examples. That was type one, the feline or pussycat sneeze. An extension or expansion of this is the atomizer or seltzer siphon variety, type 1A. Type 2 is the trombone or cataclysmic form produced by attempting to impede the expulsion of the breath by compressing the superior and inferior labia or lips. Another result of attempted stifling, futile, of course, is the ratchet or clock winding type, number 2A. Perhaps it is just as well to attempt to stifle the sneeze at times, because some of the results of lack of stifling are quite extreme. Most of us have heard the windows rattle and the echoes chase each other around in some large public building when a man has issued what seems to be an order to a boarding house kitchen, as in type 3, the mess call. And in direct contrast to this, we have number 4, the disappointing or non-eventuating sliver, in which the inspirational element is much more noticeable than the anticipated climax. And there are type 5, the chicle or spearmint mandatory, chew, chew. And number 6, the cowboy yell sneeze, whoopee. And by the way, that's where the word whoopee came from the cowboys. And number 7 is the carburetor backfire or explosive. It is true that the sneezes are listed under the inarticulate, but some of them sound like articulate. They sound like spoken words. For instance, the chocolate sneeze, number 8. Hershey! And type 9, the violent or pugilistic, hit you! And that little Friday sneeze, fish! And the spiritus fermenti, squishy! And finally, we come to the most colorful of all, the interrogatory or scandalmonger sneeze, type 12, expressing not only human interest, but also the true spirit of science, curiosity and investigation. Who is she? Who is she? And now, if you'll excuse me, I have a change of shoes and socks in the next studio. Adieu. Adieu.
Thank you.
Treasure Island. And my heart stood still when I landed on that silvery shore. We met that day on Treasure Island. And the smile you gave was the reason I'd been craving for. Then came those moments of bliss in the shade of the sheltering pines. I still remember your kiss as you nestled within my arms. I looked for gold on Treasure Island, and I found that gold when you gave your golden love to me.
In a tiny telephone booth, a girl is talking excitedly, almost bursting with good news.
I got it, Mother. They hired me, and there were over 20 girls. Uh-huh. Isn't it wonderful? Remember how it used to be? All they'd ever say was just to leave my name and they'd let me know. Well, these people were really interested. Wanted to know all about me. Nothing like it was when I had that awful broken-out skin. And Mother, just guess what they're paying me.
It's a grand feeling when you finally land the job you want, but many young people miss their big chances for jobs and promotions just because their appearance is spoiled by a broken-out skin. During the years between 13 and 25, your body undergoes the important changes of adolescence. Irritating poisons enter your blood and often make your skin break out. To help clear these harmful irritants out of your blood, eat one cake of Fleischmann's yeast before each meal. With the poisons gone, your skin will soon clear up, become smooth and attractive. Let this sensible, proven treatment help you. Start eating Fleischmann's yeast tomorrow.
This week, the manufacturers of automobiles have broken all tradition and have held their auto show earlier. All over the country, many beautiful new cars have been displayed to admiring throngs. Here are just a few of the outstanding parodies that automobile salesmen sing at their conventions. Try them on your Rotary Club tenor.
C-A-D-I-L-L-A-C, spelled Cadillac.
Out of every bolt and up the
tenor.
Never a word that you can say again.
C-A-D-I-L-L-A-C-U-C.
It's the car that a horse has never been connected with.
Cadillac for me.
down the road of life we'll fly, automobubbling you and I. To the church we'll swiftly steal, then the wedding bells will peal. You can go as far as you like with me in my merry Oldsmobile.
With you. Our line is so smart and
35 Ford has a new sort of thing for making it ride like a bird on the wing. On good roads or bumpy, no sideways swing, and they call it the new center poise. Oh, it glides o'er the road with the greatest of ease, and it rides front or back just as smooth as you please. You'll soon be a breezing along with the breeze. It's a feat, it's a beaut, it's a wow. In a very few words, it's the nut. Dying to cuddle his queen.
But every minute when he's beginning, he has to get under, get out and get under.
Then he gets back at the wheel.
A dozen times they start to hug and kiss, and then the dawn's all ended. It was missed.
And then he'd have to get under, get out and get under,
to pick up his bottle.
All of us have wondered, I think, what becomes of amateur hour performers after their brief moment in the spotlight. Major Bowles, of course, sends a great many of his discoveries forward to the professional stage in his touring company. But for the rank and file of gong dodgers, it's a short life indeed. Perhaps the outstanding example to the contrary is the young lady who is with us this evening, Miss Doris Wester. Only 17 years old, Doris came to the major from Chicago, scored a tremendous hit on his Sunday evening hour, and within 3 days was engaged to sing at the Rainbow Room, one of the highest professional goals in more ways than one. Miss Wester has a unique singing style. Perhaps it can be best described as talking a song on pitch. Her opening number, an old coward lament, Mad About the Boy. Miss Doris Wester.
A couple of weeks ago. He was rather over hearty and ridiculous. But as I'd seen him on the screen, he cast a certain spell. I basked in his attraction for a couple of hours or so. His manners were a fraction too meticulous. If he was real or not, I couldn't tell. But like a silly fool, mad about the boy. I know it's stupid to be mad about the boy. I'm so ashamed of it, but must admit the sleepless nights I've had about the boy. On the silver screen, he melts my foolish heart in every single scene. He has a gay appeal that makes me feel there's maybe something sad about the boy. Lord knows I'm not a fool girl. I really shouldn't care. I'm acting like a schoolgirl in the flurry of her first affair. Will it ever cloy this odd diversity of misery and joy? I'm feeling quite insane and dumb again. And all because I'm mad about the boy. I'm hardly sentimental.
pay my rental, but I could afford to waste more time. If I could employ a little magic that would finally destroy this dream that pains me and enchains me, but I can't, because I'm mad about the boy. I'm mad about the boy.
On the inevitable top hat, Miss Doris Wester sings, "Isn't It a Lovely Day?"
Isn't it a lovely day to be caught in the rain? You were going on your way, now you've got to remain. Just as you were going, leaving me all at sea. The clouds broke, they broke, and oh, what a break for me. I can see the sun up high, though we're caught in the storm. I can see where you and I could be cozy and warm. Let the rain suit us patter, but it really doesn't matter if the skies are gray. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day. Isn't it a lovely day to be caught in the rain? You were going on your way, now you've got to remain. Just as you were going, leaving me all at sea. The clouds broke, they broke.
I looked at you and you looked at me, and oh, what a sight were we. Boom.
Nothing in the sky above could bring the sun out. Isn't it a lucky day to be caught in the storm? Let the rain pitter-patter, but it really doesn't matter if the skies are gray. Long as I can be with you, it's a lovely day.
This is Rudy Valley going into Act Two. We have with us this evening Miriam Hopkins, Horace Braham, Eddie Stanley, Doris Wester, and Robert Wildhack. And in our studio audience tonight, as my personal guest, is a gentleman who has achieved considerable and unique prominence as an educator. He is, in fact, the youngest college president in the United States. His name in the world is William Joseph Rahill. But his students at St. Mary's College in Oakland, California, know him as Brother Albert, his religious pseudonym. I met Brother Albert for the first time out on the coast last year. It has been a great pleasure to renew our acquaintance here on the eve of the St. Mary's Fordham football game. And it is a pleasure indeed to introduce him to you. Brother Albert, at 34, the president of one of the oldest colleges on the Pacific Slope, St. Mary's. If you don't mind, Brother Albert, I'll ask you a few rather personal questions. If they're questions you want to answer, okay. If not, just tell me.
Go right ahead, Rudy. Even young college presidents are used to talking. It's the best thing we do.
Good. We'll begin with a bit of biography. Are you a native Californian?
No, Rudy. I was born in Ireland, in Dublin. My people came to this country when I was rather young. They went directly west and settled out in California.
When did you become a member of the Christian Brothers Order?
When I was 21, Rudy.
Would you tell us a little about the Christian Brothers? How such an order differs from the priesthood, for instance?
The Christian Brothers are teachers, Rudy. That's our only aim and function, to teach. The function of the priest is to administer to the spiritual needs of his people. We teach the young men of his parish. For example, I have been a teacher of chemistry and will be again, no doubt.
The order is an old one, isn't it?
No, it's rather young, as Catholic orders go. The Christian Brothers Congregation was founded in 1719 by John Baptist de La Salle, by the way, a relative of the great French explorer. It was founded for the express purpose of teaching the children of the poor.
I have been told that your teachers have a reputation for very thorough discipline.
That's correct, Rudy. And we're very proud of our reputation, too. What you've probably heard is that the Christian Brothers are a pretty hard-boiled lot. Is that it?
Yes, something like that.
Yes. You are correct again. We are pretty tough. Don't I look it?
No, I must confess you don't.
Well, perhaps we are not the hard guys we're painted. My personal opinion, and I think my opinion coincides with that of the order, is that the discipline of fear is worse than useless to a teacher. The whip, either actual or figurative, has no place in modern education. We don't go in for that sort of discipline.
Are there any Christian Brothers colleges here in the East, Brother Albert?
Yes. You have Manhattan College here in New York. We have three colleges in all in this country. There's another St. Mary's at Winona, near St. Louis, and our own St. Mary's on the coast. Of course, our main strength is in secondary schools. We have high schools in practically all the principal cities of the country.
It seems to me I recall that my good friend Bing Crosby attended St. Mary's. Is that correct?
No, Bing went to Gonzaga College. That's up north in Washington. Gonzaga is a Jesuit school like Fordham. You know, the Jesuits are friendly rivals of ours.
Yes, I guess you might call Bing a friendly rival of mine. If Bing is listening, by the way, and if he'd care to put $10 on Fordham for me, I guess you might call Bing a friendly rival of mine. If Bing is listening, by the way, and if he'd care to put $10 on Fordham for Saturday, I'll take it at even money.
And if Bing is still listening, I'll take 50 cents worth of that myself.
You don't object to betting?
Uh-huh. No, not when it comes to 50 cents. That's just about all I can afford to lose in these days.
But you don't expect to lose a Fordham game, do you?
No, Rudy, we don't. We've been east four times, and we've won three games. The boys tell me this is the number four. Of course, you understand, we St. Mary's people are very partial toward Fordham. It was Fordham's generosity and fine spirit that made it possible for us to come to New York for the first time in 1930. And that meant a lot to St. Mary's College.
Don't you think that football has grown to be a too important part of college life, brother?
Yes, I think that's probably true. As a teacher, I sometimes resent the situation. But the situation exists in nearly every college of importance in the country. As an executive, I feel I must accept the reality and turn it to whatever practical educational uses are possible. And I believe, too, that the game has value in itself as a game. We were talking about discipline. I think football training is a valuable form of discipline for any young man.
That leads up to a final question. What, in your opinion, constitutes our educated man?
Well, I have a stock answer for that one, Rudy. If a man is educated, he can fit himself into a variety of circumstances. He can deal with a multiplicity of problems calmly and with diplomacy, always choosing well and acting wisely. In short, an educated man is one who seldom, if ever, makes a fool out of himself.
Thank you very much, Brother Albert, and please accept our best wishes for the success of your administration at St. Mary's and for success against Fordham as well.
Thank you.
When I was very young,
circus tent was strung with every star in the sky above the ring I loved so well. Now the young world has grown old. Gone are the tinsel and gold. Sit there and count your fingers. What can you do? Girl, you're through. Sit there and count your little fingers, unlucky little girl blue. Sit there and count the raindrops falling on you. It's time you count on is the raindrops that fall on little girl blue. No use, old girl, you may as well surrender. Your hope is getting slender. Why won't somebody send a tender blue boy to cheer a little girl blue?
This is young Ted Merrivale, hard up for something to do.
Listen, Uncle Jack, how about you and me and Aunt Marge going to the movies? There's a new picture down at the corner.
When a young fellow like that doesn't want to go out with other young people, there's usually a good reason. And very often, it's skin trouble. A broken-out skin makes you feel unwanted, conspicuous, and out of place. But you don't have to put up with skin disorders just because you're young. You know the truth about this trouble. Between 13 and 25, you go through the period of adolescence. Harmful substances get into your blood, irritate your skin, and make it break out. But you can help to clear these poisons from your blood simply by eating Fleischmann's yeast. You eat one cake of Fleischmann's yeast a half hour before each meal. Then when your skin is again clear and good-looking, you'll have a lot more fun. You'll really feel like going out with the gang.
Hey, that's a keen idea, Stewie. We'll have a double date. You get Helen, and I'll ask Sue, and we'll go to the Rialto. Say, this is gonna be swell!
This will serve to introduce Eddie Stanley, who is not unknown to our regular listeners. Eddie is a Philadelphia boy originally, although he first came to us after a lengthy stay on the West Coast. I think you will find him an amusing young fella. Step forward, Eddie.
I would like to relate a little humorous incident that occurred a little while ago. I was coming up the street, and I saw a forlorn-looking fella sitting in the corner with his coat collar turned up. I thought maybe I could be some help, so I sat down beside him, and I asked him if he was in trouble. In trouble, he said. I lost my money, my children need shoes, we haven't anything to eat, the rent's due, lost my job, my wife ran away. Poor fella, I said, with all that trouble, it's a wonder you don't cut your throat. I have, he replied, that's why I got my coat collar turned up. Oh, always like to start the evening with some pleasant incident like that. And now, to break the monotony, I would like to introduce some feminine charm into my act. A young lady direct from Hollywood. She was in Hollywood and they directed her here. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Miss Joan Adrian. You can give her a hand if you want to. You see, I don't pay her much. You might as well get something. How are you, gal?
Fine, and you?
Well, pretty good, but I'll tell you better after we try out a few more jokes.
Okay, here's a riddle. What is the chief cause of divorce?
Divorce? Marriage.
Right.
Right. You better give me a harder one this time.
Okay. If you add 76,821 to 87,916, what would you get?
A wrong answer.
Right.
Right. Did you hear that one hit the floor? Well, carry on, carry on.
All right. Name three of the United States' greatest battleships.
That's an easy one. The USS New York, the USS Pennsylvania, and the night boat to Albany.
Right. Here's
another
one. We got him now. Go ahead.
A lady had three children.
Nick, you can't tell that. This is no smoker. It's not a nice story about that lady.
You're thinking of another lady.
I'm thinking of another lady.
I said, before I was interrupted, a lady had three...
I told you can't tell that story.
Will you let this lady have her kids?
Will I? Say, I'm a stranger around here.
Please let me finish this riddle.
Well, go ahead.
Well, a lady had three children and four apples. Now, how did she divide the four apples among the three children?
I give up.
She made applesauce.
Made applesauce. I haven't heard that in 20 years. You don't know any newer ones. Do you say about 15 years old?
Oh, sure.
Well, go ahead.
A man had four horses and three stalls. How did he get the four horses in the three stalls?
I know that one. He made horseradish. It's all new stuff, folks. It's all new. Give me one more and then you can go.
Okay. What's the difference between evening and night?
Evening and night? Well, if I call you on the evening, I call on you in the evening, you'd have on an evening gown. Graham. I just received a letter from my folks back on the farm. You know, before my mother married my father, she went around with a fella called Joe Miller. So sometimes her letters are sort of funny. She's really a very marvelous person, my mother. Dear old mother. I can see her now standing by the window. I knew she was standing because Pa had just sold all the chairs. Well, here's the letter. My dear son, Eddie, just a few lines to let you know what is going on back here on the farm. First off, the livestock is doing fine. Your father gives the hens hot water, and now they lay boiled eggs for breakfast. Lucy the cow just gave birth to her fifth calf. Your Uncle Eb says if she has another calf, it will be the sextet from Lucy. Oh, well, old man Kelly passed away, and your father went to the funeral. He saw old Jim laid out in a full dress suit, and he said, poor Jim, he didn't believe in heaven, and he didn't believe in the other place, and there he is all dressed up with no place to go. It's all new stuff, folks. At the funeral, Uncle Lem got very drunk. When they ran out of liquor, Lem would stand in front of an electric fan, let his breath flow back at him, and get drunk all over again. Says your cousin Joe entered an amateur contest. He was imitating all the big star actors, and he was doing all right till somebody else imitated Eddie Cantor. And Joe yelled back, Eddie Cantor's not an actor. He's got five daughters. He's a producer. I don't know. I expected something after telling that joke. Just jealousy. I get it. Aunt Lizzie got married secretly. She hasn't told anyone yet. She's waiting for her husband to sober up. She wants him to be the first one to know. Says he's nice, but kind of old. He not only has sown his wild oats, but he's reaped them, ripped them, sacked them, tore them open, and sowed them again. Oh, boy. Says your kid brother Spanky don't want to be the president of the United States anymore. He says, look at George Washington's wife, Martha. She wound up with one of those candy stores. And if George was the father of 120 million people, what time did Martha have to make candy? Oh, it's all high-class stuff. Says that Aunt Minnie just got a divorce from her no-good husband, Ezzy. The judge says, I'm going to give your wife $10 a week. That's straight, yelled Ezzy. I'll try and kick in a buck once in a while myself, too. Well, I guess that about finishes all the gossip from home, so I will now make my exit. So long, folks.
Pie, and he's my
which leads up to Miss Miriam Hopkins, presented tonight by arrangement with Samuel Goldwyn, producer of Barbary Coast, her latest and a grand picture. You will hear Miss Hopkins tonight in a scene from The Lake by Dorothy Massingham and Murray MacDonald. As her leading man, we have selected Horace Brehm, who played one of the principal roles in the New York production of Street Scenes. One of the screen's loveliest stars, and one of our finest emotional actresses as well, Miss Miriam Hopkins. The Lake is the story of Stella Surridge, a girl who finds love for a brief moment. Our scene, the fashionable London country house of Stella's parents. The occasion is a reception following Stella's wedding to Captain John Clayne. Although John Clayne is now Stella's husband, he does not believe that she loves him. He knows, in fact, that Stella has married him, as one might say, on the rebound after another romance. Stella has asked to see John alone for a moment before they say goodbye to their guests and start on their wedding trip. We find John Clayne alone now, waiting for Stella, who enters hurriedly.
John, I changed as quickly as I could, and I came down by the side staircase. Mother thinks I'm still upstairs. I don't think anyone saw me.
Stella. Stella.
Wait, John. Wait. When we go away from here, we start a new life together, don't we?
I hope so. Yes.
Well, I want it to be new in every way. That's why I wouldn't leave here without your knowing. I never actually lied to you. Never in words. I never said I loved you. But I let you believe it. You made it easier by demanding so little. But you must have trusted me, and I've done nothing but betray you.
How is that?
I took the easiest way. Oh, it's done every day, but there isn't anything more vile or more dishonest, really, than to take everything and give nothing all the time.
It's all right, my dear. I know.
You know that I loved Cecil?
Yes.
How did you know?
The look on your face that day when I came in.
That day? The day you found us together?
Yes.
You know. Oh, I'm so ashamed. Do you want me to tell...
No. Nothing more, sir.
What have you been thinking about me all this time?
I love you.
Well, that makes it so much worse. Letting you go on all these months. Oh, I think if any man had treated me as I've treated you, I'd have left him even on my wedding day.
Oh, is that what you're thinking? There'd be some talk, of course, deserting one's bride on one's wedding day.
Is that the only reason that you would stop you?
You know it isn't. Shall I then?
What?
Go my way and let you go yours.
No.
Why not?
I can't say it.
Is it so difficult?
Yes.
Try.
Oh, I do love you so.
My darling.
Oh, John. You're trembling.
It's been a long time.
What?
Waiting to hear you say that.
Oh, God.
How long have you known?
Since one night about 3 weeks ago. We came back through the park, you remember. It was after 7, and you made me sit down by you and rest, and you were saying something. Well, I wasn't looking at you, but across the lake at the sun setting behind the trees. I turned to you. I think I meant to tell you about Cecil then, but I couldn't. Oh, John, your face looked so sad. But it wasn't the face of a stranger anymore. It was just someone I'd known all my life. Dear and familiar. Like a book one reads mechanically, and then the words all come together in sentences that mean something. I knew then. There was no need to trouble or question anymore. It was all answered.
Stella.
Forgive me. I love you so.
Yes.
Oh, John. John, will there ever be a time when my heart won't beat quick when I hear you coming? Will your love get a little colder every year?
In 10, 20, 30 years, I shall love you as I love you now, today.
Oh, John, we shan't be the same in 30 years.
What does that matter?
Doesn't it?
No.
Oh, do love me like this, always. Oh, John, John, John. Oh, there. We ought to go. You hold my bag while I put my hat on. Look, it's raining much harder.
Is it raining?
No, it's a lovely day. The sun's blazing and the moon's out. Oh, what's the use of being in love if you can't make the sun and the stars come out together?
Come here, Stella.
Oh, John, I was never worth a third of your little finger.
Oh, my dear.
I don't care, it's true.
All right. Mm-hmm. I have all the virtue and you have all the charm. Come to me, Stella.
Darling, is it real?
It's the only real thing in this world.
Is it? I can't feel it when I try to see further than this day. I seem to be standing before a curtain that won't lift. I can't see behind it or beyond it. Why is it?
You're worn out with all this.
Oh, John, I've lived all my life like a ghost in this house. Let's never have a house. Let's live in a barn or a tent or... oh, just something we can put up and take down in a moment.
All right, we'll buy one. And camp out at night on a wild, wet, Welsh hillside.
Lovely. I wish we could and never come back.
My dear, we'll build a nest and live in a treetop.
I believe you could. You don't need things or people. Not even me.
That's not true.
Oh, my dear, you love me, I know, but you don't need me as I do you. Utterly.
My sweet.
True. Love has made such a coward of me. I could be afraid of every little threatening thing that can hurt or come between us. Aren't you afraid of those?
Not now. If there were a chasm out there, 1,000 feet deep, with nothing but a rope to cross it, I'd do it blindfolded with you in my arms.
Now I come with you.
Come on, then. Why don't we go now?
Yes, I can't face all those people again.
All right, I don't see why we should.
Come on. Hey, John, it stopped raining. And the air's so clear and cool and fresh. But what about our things?
They're all in the car.
Marvelous.
Here we are. We can't go out of the east gate because so many cars are parked there. You can see...
Yes, we can go around on the edge of the lake and cut out that way. It's awfully muddy, though.
Rather. Hop in, darling. I think the others have discovered our escape.
Yes. Here they come. Do hurry.
Right. Well, here we go.
It looks awfully slippery.
Are you frightened?
Not with you. Not if it were a chasm of 1,000 feet deep.
Oh, darling.
They're calling after us. Don't stop.
Not a chance.
John! John, we're skidding. Look out! Ah!
The water. I think Stella was thrown clear. What about Plain?
He's in the car, I'm afraid. They skidded. I saw him try to right it, but he couldn't. The car, it went straight over the bank. You better get the gardeners out here at once.
Right. I'll send for a doctor, too. And you look after Stella.
Right, Elf.
What happened?
Oh, you can't do anything. Come away.
Oh, Stella. Oh, awful.
Is she
captain?
All right?
Well,
she
fainted.
Oh, my God. Oh, shh. Quiet. They're bringing Stella over here now.
Let me come to her. I'm her mother. Here. Bring her over here, please. Careful now. Put her down on these chairs. There. That will do. Ethel.
Yes, madam.
Please see that all the guests are sent away. Yes, Mrs. Sturridge. Henry, is she?
She's safe, dear. Only fainted.
And John? What about John?
We don't know yet.
She's coming too. Stella, it's all right, dear. You are safe. It's quite all right.
Mrs. Sturridge,
what is it, Ethel?
It's the captain. He's dead.
Oh, Lena. John.
Oh, she's coming too.
Hello, Mother. What's happened? You've had an accident here. The car skidded. But it's all right. You'll be all right in a moment.
Yes.
I'm quite all right. The car... Where's John? Mother, why don't you answer?
Nice, darling.
No. Mother.
Where is he?
What's happened?
John! John! John!
Take me back to my boots and saddle. Let me see that general store. Let me ride that range once more. Give me my boots and saddle. Let me ramble along the prairie. Robin steers an old barrack with my body slim and peck. Give me my boots and saddle. Got a hankering to be with a banjo on my knee. I'm in a pretty western tune. There's a gal in Cherokee and she's waiting there for me. Waiting beneath a Texas moon. So take me back to my boots and saddle. Let me greet each blazing morn on the ranch where I was born. Give me my boots and saddle. Take me back to my boots and saddle. Let me greet each blazing morn on the ranch where I was born. Give me my boots and saddle.
In a moment, a young lady of 17 will take my place at the microphone. She will ask a question that a great many young people would like to hear answered. Then a physician, Dr. R. E. Lee, will reply. This is the question.
It's been just my luck to have my skin break out terribly. This skin trouble is bad enough in itself. But why does it always have to be where it shows the most? On my face and neck and shoulders.
Yes, what is the explanation of this, Dr. Lee?
Well, Mr. McNamee, we can all sympathize with a young person who has this trouble. It is embarrassing when the skin breaks out in such conspicuous places. During adolescence, the entire skin is oversensitive to irritants in the blood. It may break out anywhere, but usually the eruptions appear where the oil glands are being most stimulated, and that is on the face, neck, and shoulders. To correct this trouble, you should clear the blood of the poisons that can cause such skin irritation. You can usually do this by eating a simple food, Fleischmann's yeast. 3 cakes of Fleischmann's yeast should be eaten regularly each day. 1 cake half an hour before each meal. Then as the irritants are cleared from the blood, your complexion regains its normal clearness and attractiveness. Let me suggest that you begin this treatment immediately.
As many of you may have read, our director, Rudy Valley, has been offered and has accepted the presidency of the American Federation of Actors, whose main purpose and object is to bring back vaudeville. He has a message of the greatest importance.
It may not have occurred to many of you, but vaudeville has been the training ground and school for most of our famous picture and radio names today. To mention a few, Will Rogers, Eddie Cantor, Fred Astaire, Jack Benny, Jimmy Durante, Joe Penner, Dick Powell, and many others. And if vaudeville becomes entirely extinct, there is a possibility that the future will see us without many outstanding performers to entertain us. May I ask that you get behind the Bring Back Vaudeville movement, and those of you living in and about New York can help tremendously by attending the benefit to be held this Sunday at the Majestic Theater. I think you'll see one of the finest shows you've ever seen in all your life. It'll be sponsored by the American Federation of Actors. Next week, the Fleischman G-Star brings you the famous English star, Colin Clive, Billy House, William Eugene Howard, and more in a distinguished cast. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Heard on this program were Thanks a Million from the production of the same name, Little Girl Blue from Jumbo, and Eeny, Meeny, Miney, Moe from To Beat the Band. This is the National Broadcasting Company.